So in my language, I would say Tansi, Makisis, Deshikanashu, Ayan Michifnia. My name is Fox. I'm from the Métis Nation. My settler name on my birth certificate, William Joseph Harasimo. I often joke with people who meet me the first time and have some sense of my indigeneity as I say Harasimo is Cree for a really funny guy. It's not Cree. It's a derivation of a Ukrainian ancestor, not even an ancestor of mine, but we carry that name from a Ukrainian immigrant. It was probably Gerasimov, but the officer that took the name down wrote it as Harasimo. But I own it as a Cree funny name. That's my son there, just last week, Indigenous grad ceremony for the Surrey Indigenous School District, which I work for, so I got paid to go to my son's grad, which is really nice. That's a ribbon shirt I wore. I was debating whether to wear the ribbon shirt today or this, so I'm glad the picture's up there so you can see that. I made that. I'm very proud of it. So a ribbon shirt is another universal indigenous item in Canada and in North America. So it's one of the few things that maybe are most likely to be shared across all the indigenous cultures in Canada. And there are very, very few. Another one, I think if we go to the next slide, hopefully we got the medicine wheel. There it is. Look at that. This is awesome. So the medicine wheel, again, is been adapted or used, and it's one of the universal things in indigenous culture in Canada. The indigenous, or the medicine wheel, there's several purposes for it. But basically, you see that there's four sides here. There's the spiritual, physical, mental, and emotional. And I like to point out how little of this resides in the material. Okay? Indigenous peoples lived in a state of nature, in a spirit world. Everything had spirit. The rock, the water, the sky. We lived in a spirit world. And when we do a self-examination, you like to do this once a year, twice a year, but you would go through the medicine wheel and you'd examine, am I eating properly? Am I exercising? Am I doing enough crosswords or Sudoku for the mental aspect? Am I expressing my emotions? You know, sometimes we like to harbor our inner emotions. We let them sit there and burn up and whatnot. So, and then the spiritual. So as indigenous peoples, we're supposed to explore this in our lives. And in the work I do, especially in the school district, because we're not allowed to teach religion in schools anymore, but I am a spiritual being and I'm indigenous. And as indigenous people, sometimes we break the rules. And so I break the rules. I often have spiritual discussions with my students. And some of the biggest questioners I find are the recent immigrants, refugees from Syria. We have a huge Muslim population at my school. And they respect me because of my spirituality and my acceptance of theirs. And that's one of our values, right? Come as you are. And also, when I did my DNA, I have like 3% Palestinian DNA. And I did the DNA test to confirm my indigeneity, but it was really surprising. And it goes back to my name, Harasimo, is not from my ancestor. My grandmother had my father out of wedlock and married a man that was willing to accept her being pregnant and with child. And so I carry that name, but it's not my name. My Métis side, I can go back with my lineage back to just around 1867. The first document was an ancestor of mine got married. Now, that was really cool. On my grandfather's side, my French side, we go back, I can trace my lineage back to the 1500s. And that's in Montreal, when he landed at Montreal. But of course, you know, my indigenous side, my Cree great-great-great-great-great-grandmother, that goes back at least 20,000 years, you know, my DNA has been on this land. Now, I wrote a short story for a contest, and one of the first lines was, I grew up being in Dawson City as the whitest, blonde-haired, blue-eyed Indian in Dawson City. I wasn't the only blonde-haired Indian in Dawson City. The other one was my best friend, Jay, but he had brown eyes. And Jay went on to become chief of Dawson City, which I found out when I was reading that story at the contest I'd won. Unbeknownst to me, there were people in the audience from Dawson City, and they approached me afterwards. Is that Jay? Was that it? And so I've learned now in my writing career to change the names. You know, the story was semi-autobiographical. But yeah, I grew up white and not really knowing my indigenous aspect of my life until I went to a family gathering in Whitehorse. So my family had homesteaded a lot of land in the Yukon. In the Watson Lake area, we cut down trees. And in the land around Whitehorse, there's Lake LaBarge, a very large glacial lake, huge, huge, huge. And my aunt had homesteaded land there, and that land she used as an outfitter. So she would take big, usually Texan guys with big oil money would come up and they want to shoot a bear and then mount it, or they want to shoot a mountain goat and they mount it as a trophy. That's a big thing in Texas. So every spring, she goes out on her ranch because she just lets the horses run wild during the winter, and any that survive, that's great. But in the spring, she has to go around shooting all the gophers because the gopher holes, are bad hazard for the horses. And so we're at this gathering, and it's a gopher roast. So I don't know if anyone's ever tried gopher. It tastes like dark chicken meat. You know, it's all dark. Yeah, we ate a whole bunch of gopher that day. But at the gathering, there was a lot of indigenous people, like full blood, dark skinned, you know, black hair. And one of them was a bully from my class, Ian McDonald. Again, should I change the names? I don't know. So he was a bully. He bullied me, you know. And in living in the Yukon, there was just two people. There was whites and Indians. Any other color was very rare. So this Indian boy, Ian McDonald from my class, was at this barbecue, and I just avoided him because he picked on me in class. But I needed more Kool-Aid, so I went up to my Aunt Belle, and I go, Aunt Belle, can I have some more Kool-Aid? But at the exact same time, Ian McDonald was going up to my aunt, and he said, Aunt Belle, can I have more chips? And I looked at him. I go, that's my Aunt Belle. And he goes, no, that's my Aunt Belle. And we were both confused. And I was very upset. I was, you know, maybe 8 at the time. And I ran to my mom and I'm like, upset. Mom, what's going on? Aunt Belle, Ian McDonald, he called Aunt Belle. Like, what's going on? And she goes, yes, Billy Joe. And that's where Billy comes from. Billy Joe, I grew up as Billy Joe. You're Indian too. And so at 8 years old, that was my epiphanous moment that I was indigenous. So I grew up knowing that. But it didn't really mean much because there were, as a Métis person, there are not a lot of rights attached to that, whereas status would have housing and education and healthcare paid for, different things like that. But in 1983, that changed with the Constitution Act. It recognized Métis people. And so there was a resurgence of what did that mean to be Métis. What was our role in the indigenous community? And it did give me the right to get my job. So my job as an indigenous education assistant in the Surrey School District, our staff in our department were all indigenous. Okay, it's hard to fill those roles because it's hard to find an educated Indian. And I apologize using the Indian so much. I grew up an Indian. Then I became Aboriginal and now I'm Indigenous and I feel like St. Petersburg in Russia, you know, the name change. So I'm an Indian. I grew up an Indian. I still exist in Canada under the Indian Act. It's still called the Indian Act. And so my existence in Canada, there's legislation involved in that. And for settlers, you don't have that. You don't live with an Indian Act. There's no Filipino Act, you know, there's no Indo-Canadian Act. There's an Indian Act that dictates where I can live, who I can marry, whether I can go to university, whether I can vote. There's an Indian Act. So that separates us. There's a separateness there, just by that very nature of that law. And then there's the cultural differences. There's the act of colonialism and what it did to our people. Now, when I joined and got inducted, recruited into the National Indigenous Council, and I'm trying to keep this to 15 minutes, Bruce. It's going to be hard, but we're going to cover a lot. So the National Indigenous Council, Russell and Charlene Burns came to speak at our community of faith at Mount Seymour United, much like I'm doing now. We had initially invited Murray Pruden, the Indigenous Minister of Canada, but he couldn't make it, so Russell and Charlene came. When they came, I was asked to do a traditional welcome, a recognition of territories in Cree, okay? Because, you know, we wanted to pay homage to Russell and Charlene, so I got up and I did it in Cree. I didn't know that Russell and Charlene were fluent in Cree. And Charlene was almost brought to tears hearing her language in a white part of Vancouver. Like, could you imagine being an Indigenous person and coming to what you were perceiving as a white church and hearing your own language? How touching that was for her. So right from the get-go, and big part of their speech, I was right in the front row, and I was pointed to, this man needs to come to the spiritual gathering in Edmonton. This man. So, I got invited to the spiritual gathering in Edmonton, and it was amazing. I've never heard so much of our first languages being spoken so fluently by the elders there. And, you know, the level, when I go to Indigenous gatherings, like, I mean, our people we're still in a process of recovery from the trauma of colonialization. That's why there's Truth and Reconciliation. So to be at a church gathering like that, where there's more success, less of what plagues our people, and those plagues being substance abuse, right? The trauma from the residential schools. So to be at that spiritual gathering was amazing. And I was inducted as a member of the National Indigenous Council. I represent the Pacific Mountain region. And it's a co-seat. So I share the vote and the seat with Keita Billy. And she's Alberta Billy's granddaughter. Alberta Billy was the lady, if you don't know the story, but she went and demanded an apology, right? She broke protocol of the meeting and she just got up and demanded it. And the United Church was awesome. They apologized almost immediately. They made a formal apology for residential schools, and they did it before consulting their lawyers. Every other church had this long, well, and a lot of churches haven't done it yet, but they wanted to consult the lawyers. What is our liability? You know what? The United Church did not do that. The lawyers said, it doesn't matter, you owe the apology. We'll worry about it after. And so that, you know, that speaks a lot to me as an Indigenous person, what the United Church, why I'm a member of the United Church, why I chose this as my spiritual place. I had a sweat lodge, and I had a spiritual experience, what we call a white light moment, you know, the burning bush. A vision came to me. First, I got my spirit animal was the buffalo. So after a session in the sweat lodge, there was a heat rash on my back, but it was in a distinct shape of a buffalo, right? And part of my spiritual experience with that one was I needed a formal structure with my higher power. And to me, that meant finding a church, a place of worship that I belonged. And I chose the United Church. So the spiritual gathering was great. I learned about the apology and how quickly it happened. I also learned, like, you know, a lot of the perspective was Indigenous people, they live off the government, right? They're on essentially a welfare system. And that's true. There's a lot of transfer payments. But the transfer payments do not come from tax dollars. They do not come from tax dollars. The transfer payments made to Indigenous peoples who need that support come from royalties on resources. And that makes sense. As you need to sink that in and spread that message. There's so much judgment that we're living on welfare. We're living on the Canadian taxpayer dollar. No, we're living on royalties from the resources that were ours before contact. So that was another really enlightening thing. Carmen Lansdowne shared that with us. It was just so mind-blowing to hear that. What is the National Indigenous Council? We like to describe it as two canoes in a river. There's National Council and us. But to be honest, and I don't know if the next slide comes up. Let's see. There it is. To be honest, we're not there yet. We need help. We're not prepared. It was very intimidating. We went to our first National Indigenous Council meeting in person out in Mississauga. National Council was meeting at the same time. We had a session with them. There was mixed reactions. We felt very unprepared. The people on National Council are business leaders, top church people. We don't have that type of population to draw from. So it was very intimidating. We're not ready. Truth and reconciliation is two ways. And a lot is being done by Canada, by the United Church in particular as well. But that's a two-way street. And we're not prepared. We're working at it. We are, when we went in for about the remit was passed. The council member, we did not know what that meant. And then we were being asked to answer that. Now we found out more. But Dances with Dependencies by Calvin Helene. And he's an Indigenous lawyer, but he calls out our people. And he's very unpopular with Indigenous peoples. But he is Indigenous, so he has a right to write this book. And he's essentially saying to us, like, we need to get our heads out of our derriere and we need to pick up the ball and carry this, you know. And I believe that. I am also unpopular. You know, we need to get over it. We need to get over the trauma. We need to quit making excuses. We need to heal and we need to grow and move on. We need to become more contemporary and not afraid to have our culture evolve. We do not need to be placed in history anymore. And that's a hard thing. And it has created some dissonance within the National Indigenous Council. We don't get along. Could you imagine? The European Union came about. That was a whole bunch of nations that came out and have the European Union. They're not going to get along, they're not going to agree, and UK left, okay? That's the National Indigenous Council. We are many nations, and there's very many viewpoints, and there's very many different, you know, initiatives that want to be taken, and it's hard for us to agree on that. And also, as a Métis person representing the West Coast, I was subject to animosity, maybe a little bit of lateral racism. I'm Métis, I'm not of the West Coast. But I'm qualified, and I was willing to show up. So I did, and I faced some backlash, and I'm still adjusting to that. So what is going on in the National Indigenous Council? A big thing is, we're calling it the state of emergency meetings. Where am I at on time? Is there a couple of minutes? Okay. So, yeah, I could come back and we could just go on and on and on. Just Bruce's and I's discussion on the car ride here, we realized, you know, there's a lot. So we're going to just keep it succinct in that, what is the National Indigenous Council doing? It's a state of emergency because of what's going on in the communities, the isolated communities. If there is ministry care there, those ministers are burnt out. There's so much death. You know, there's a lot of death, and it's a lot to do with substance use. So could you imagine being a minister and there's just a death every week, you know, and it's a young person. It's a person who's 16, 17, 20, 21. And what does that do to the community? Could you imagine working in a community constantly dealing with that? So a big thing, what we are agreeing on, is let's take care of those ministers. So we're creating a retreat for them, and that's now active on the website. Okay, so if you want to make a contribution to that, to the retreat for these ministers who are dealing with that, that is now active on the website, so you can go and make a contribution to that. That is something you can do. That is something I agree that should be done, and so it's active. It's up there. Go ahead and do it. We're also working towards our next spiritual gathering in Nova Scotia, which is celebrating the 100 years, and we're coordinating with local First Nations to have a bigger powwow. So again, that was something we could agree on. So we're really looking forward to that. I probably won't go. Flight for me is not agreeable. It gives me migraines, so I can mostly only do stuff online with the meetings, anything that's out far. I also am on the Pacific Mountain Regional Council, Indigenous Council, and I'm also on the Urban Indigenous Council for the National Indigenous Church. It is a journey. We need the National Church to help us out, and we will get there. And you know, thank you for allowing me to speak and to touch on a lot of those things. I'll be available after service. There's a lot of questions and stuff like that. But with that, again, with closings, I will say all my relations, and that's a traditional kind of welcome or ending to that. And thank you, Bruce, and for the community for inviting me today. So.
And we want to say Haichka to you. Thank you for doing so well, honestly, at covering a lot of different ground. So thank you, Haichka.
Thanks very much, Bruce.
To you, and thank you for being here. And our prayers of the people today will focus on the Indigenous Church. And so we'll continue to hold all of you in prayer. And it's so good for us to hear, Billy. Thank you. About the diversity of perspectives and the struggles. It's like, yeah, governments at every level, whether it's in the church, in the city, in the province, the nation, among nations, there's a multiplicity of perspectives and passions. And we appreciate hearing that about that diversity. And there'll be opportunities for us to contribute. I think I'll be asking our board to consider a grant from our Sharing the Wealth Fund towards the particular, because that's a really powerful, important thing that we can do to support Indigenous ministers who are, like, I'm embarrassed to talk about this, the conditions under which I work among those colleagues, right? I got it cushy, I know it. So whatever we can do to support those ministries, it would be great. So thank you so much again. So let's...